You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts its money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. Game 7. Game, set, match. Somebody's curse will be broken this evening. We're going to break it down. Mark Lawrence is going to join us. And don't forget, Mark Lawrence, originally from Cleveland. That's right. And in fact, we learned an interesting tidbit about Mark Lawrence a couple of weeks ago. Not only is Mark from Cleveland, Mark used to be a scalper outside of Municipal Stadium. So we're going to be breaking this down, man. Mark Lawrence joins us. Cam Stewart's going to join us in studio. You like football? Well, we've got one of the greatest football players ever to play in the National Football League. It's time to listen and learn, kids, because Jackie Slater will be joining us on the program. This guy played 20 years in the National Football League. 20 years, all right? The average career is about 3.4 or something. This cat played for 20 years, seven-time Pro Bowler, and oh yeah, he was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's going to be inducted into the show here in about 20 minutes' time as Jackie Slater will join us. We're going to talk some NFL football with Cam Stewart. We'll run the gauntlet. We got three games on the National Hockey League ice tonight that we'll take a look at as well. We got picks for you across the board, some NBA picks. We nailed the baseball last night. My bad. We didn't give you the college of football. We tweeted it out. You got to follow us on Twitter, man. You know, we could only tell you so many times. Follow us on Twitter. And if you follow us on Twitter, you'll know that I'm fired up for Game 7 of the World Series. The Chicago Cubs haven't won since 1908. Cleveland Indians haven't won since 1948. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I've been kind of tired and sickened of the apple pie that was poured on top of this by Joe Buck. Yeah, we get it. All right, Chicago haven't won in a long time, and the Cleveland Indians haven't won in a long time. And I think part of me sort of is resentful because I'm a Raptor fan and the Cavaliers won the championship last year. So I'm thinking these same people that are in the stadium that I'm going to feel sorry for were laughing at me as a Raptor fan last year. I don't feel sorry for anybody, all right? Besides besides my bookie when I can't pay him on time. But I'm going to be able to pay him on time because we're going to nail this game this evening. But I've kind of softened my stance. This is pretty cool because I started to think about it. It's like, I'm a diehard Raptor fan, but I didn't lose any sleep over the Blue Jays losing. So you know there's an old lady in Cleveland right now that doesn't give a crap about LeBron James. She doesn't care about the NBA, and she doesn't care about an NBA championship. She's been going to Cleveland Indian games for the last 65 years and wants to see the Tribe finally win a World Series again. Similar situation with Chicago. I find the Cub fans to be somewhat fair-weather drunks, bunch of like college yuppie kids, singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game and all that type of crap. But there are diehard fans mixed amongst them, and I'm not going to take away how special this is. I can only hope as a Buffalo Bill fan that I get to experience what one of your fan bases are going to experience tonight. So who's going to win the baseball game tonight? You can go either way on this, but we've got a couple of interesting angles here that I thought sort of correlate and come into place. We told you before the World Series started that the Cubs haven't won in 108 years, and there are exactly 108 stitches on a Major League Baseball. We told you that the corporate head office of the Rickett family that owned the Chicago Cubs happens to be on 108th Street in Omaha, Nebraska. Now, I got to wonder about that, though, because how is it possible there's 108 streets in Omaha, Nebraska? Like, I could figure, like, yeah, your head office on 8th Street. It's on Main Street. 108th Street, you really have 107 other streets in Omaha? Evidently, they do. How about this for weird-ass symmetry? You've got Chris Bryant. Chris Bryant became the first player in the World Series to have four hits and hit a home run in an elimination game. The last player to do it, Willie Stargell, Pops, the 1979 Pittsburgh Pirates. Why is that relevant? Who was the last team to come back from a 3-1 series deficit and win Game 7 on the road and win the World Series? You guessed it, the 1979 We Are Family Pittsburgh Pirates. Things are starting to fall into place for the Chicago Cubs right now. Now listen, Corey Kluber's going to try to become the first pitcher since 1968 to win three games in a World Series as a starting pitcher. It's not going to happen. Harry Carey is going to be very happy tonight, smiling from the heavens. Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win and end the curse. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions. We are live on the Fantasy Sports Network. I am Gabriel Morenci. Show replays at 5:30. And, of course, it plays on Fantasy Sports Network Radio and the radio networks at 5 o'clock, available on iTunes, Android devices, and all that other modern stuff. All right, we got a ton of stuff to get to. Cam Stewart's going to join me in studio in a couple of moments' time. And don't forget, you can join me and Cam live Friday night, December the 9th, in Toronto, Ontario, at the Parkdale Drink, as we celebrate 15 years of Sports Rage, my 15th anniversary of my first shows of in the industry. I got into this stuff in 2002. We throw it down. We have a little tour: Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, Las Vegas. So we hope that you can join us at one of the four tour stops. So a ton of stuff to get to. Not only Cam Stewart, but Hall of Famer Jackie Slater is going to join us on the program, man. Jackie freaking Slater, one of the greatest linemen ever to play in the National Football League. And he was actually a college teammate of Walter Payton, man. I got goosebumps just saying that right now. So we got Jackie Slater, Cam Stewart, and another Hall of Famer, Mr. Mark Lawrence, stepping up and in. Playbook.com. Mark, it's always a pleasure. How you doing?
I'm doing terrific, Gabe. Congratulations on 15 years. My hat's off to you. When I hear that, I think about people talk about 15 years celebrating sobriety. I think in your case, it's more like 15 years of celebrating pounding it.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. 15 years of sports, drugs, and rock and roll, Mark.
There you go.
And you know what? You've been a part of probably what, about 12 of them or so, we'd say?
I would say yes, at least probably
it's been a while. How long ago was it that we went to Vegas? Remember that opening Saturday college day? We did the big Covers Experts launch.
No, that might have been 10 years ago anyway. You know, that's so it's been that long, sure.
Yeah, that was a great time, great weekend. Went to see UNLV play Oregon State that weekend, Mark. I think you left after the shows, but we went with Merrill and Cam and the boys. We went to a UNLV Running Rebel Oregon State Beaver game, and we covered the point spread too, so it was a lot of fun.
those are the best. All that mattered was whether they covered the spread or not.
Nothing worse than going to a game and losing, Mark.
You probably don't even remember who won the game, do you?
Yeah, you know what? Oregon State won.
All right, there you go.
State won, but UNLV covered.
Cool.
Yeah, UNLV covered, and I was pretty hammered, Mark, but UNLV covered. But you know what I remember about this? I wish I could remember the kid's name, and you'd remember it too if you heard it. I think it was the Nick Sherry kid. Remember the quarterback, the decent quarterback? What was his name? Omar Clayton? Remember he was the UNLV quarterback?
I do remember Omar, but the name's escaping
me. Yeah, the last name would escape me too. But they had a decent quarterback, and he got hurt in the game. And the quarterback came in, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh, no, he's a kid. This is his first game. Who the hell's this guy? And his first pass was like an ugly duck, Mark, all right? So I said, oh, man, we're in freaking a lot of trouble, man, with this guy out here. I get a tap on the shoulder, and it's this hot chick. She's like, that's my brother. He's gonna be just fine. He's a great quarterback. And I'm like, oh. So I'm like, let's go. And then I was there with the family. I'm hugging the sister when he threw a touchdown pass. It was great. And UNLV covered. And I remember I turned around to the family and I said, well, we didn't win the game, but thanks to your son, we covered the spread. Thanks a lot. Tell him thanks.
That's a great story.
Yeah, fun times. All right, so speaking of great stories, Mark, it could be a great story tonight in C-Town, your hometown. Tell us about, I said earlier, the Cleveland Cavaliers won a championship. And that sort of softens it to me that, oh, Cleveland haven't won in forever. Stipe Miocic, actually the UFC heavyweight champion right now as well. But with that being stated, baseball's different, isn't it, Mark? The Cleveland Cavaliers haven't been playing since the early 1900s, right? Like, you know, the stadium wasn't built for the Cleveland Cavaliers. The mistake by the lake, etc. Just everything that comes into this. Everybody talks about the Cubs and the lovable losers, but Cleveland has a strong tradition of baseball, has had a loyal fan base over the years, and always come up short.
I'll tell you how loyal the fan base is, at least on my side of the coin, Gabe. The last time they won a World Series was the year I was born, 1948. That's the last time that they won this World Series. They made it back there in 54. That was the year that when Willie Mays made the catch on Vic Wertz, you know, that great celebrated catch. That was the 54 World Series. But, you know, they're a blue-collar team, Cleveland.
I didn't know that, Mark. So Willie Mays' catch was against the Indians, huh?
Yes, it was in that series in 1954, and that turned it around. I mean, that was, you know, a dramatic catch, obviously, against the Indians, who had the best record in Major League Baseball. In fact, I think they had won the most games in Major League Baseball history going into that 54 series, but it wasn't to be that particular year.
So growing up then, so you're growing up as a kid, you know, you knew, hey, they won a World Series, you know, 10 years ago when you were a 10-year-old. They were in the World Series in 54, et cetera. So they were actually a good franchise in those days.
They were a real good franchise in those days. I mean, they had Hall of Fame pitchers, Al Rosen, a third baseman, Bob Feller. You know, everybody knows Bob Feller, early win. They did a really, really good baseball team. Lou Boudreau, their shortstop, was the manager of that 54 baseball team. So a lot of tradition with the Cleveland Indians, as there is a lot of tradition with the Chicago Cubs, undoubtedly. It's just that they've been a little bit longer for between drinks of water than Cleveland has, 48 for us and 08 for the Cubs. So whoever wins this series tonight, the town's going to be rocking crazy, believe me.
Yeah, and speaking of drinks of water, the Cubs fans, they don't need water. They need beer. Right? They've been drinking beer all these years. And, you know, I think something's forgot, too. Everyone talks about Jackie Robinson and the Dodgers, but the Indians are the first American League team to have an African-American player, Mark.
Larry Doby, exactly right.
Larry Doby. Right. Yeah, yes. That's sort of forgotten about in Indians history as well. Something that caught my eye, Mark, and I know, so you're an Indian fan, but something that caught my eye about this, and you're a trend guy. What do you think about this? Chris Bryant last night, 4 hits and a home run. First time since 1979 that somebody got 4 hits and hit a home run in a World Series elimination game. The last player to do it, Willie Stargell and the 1979 Pittsburgh Pirates, who also happened to be the last team to come back and win from a 3-1 deficit and win Game 7 on the road, Mark.
Oh, we are family, the Pittsburgh Pirates. That was Willie Stargell. It was really great years for the Pittsburgh Pirates back then, and nice company that Chris Bryant joins in with that performance last night. 4 hits, a home run in an elimination game. Congratulations.
Yeah, it might have been the coolest team ever, that Pirate team. Like the hats, you know, Kent Cataldi coming out of the bullpen with a sidearm, the Cobra, Madden, you know, Tanner, just everything. Just such a cool team. The baseball was cool in the 70s, though. They were all coked up, Mark, in those days, everyone.
Yeah, they were, but the problem was the public didn't realize it back then. Today they do.
Yeah, I know. All right. Kluber, 4-1 in the postseason. What's also amazing to me, too, is that Kluber actually got the win in the All-Star game, Mark, and here he is pitching in Game 7 of the World Series. So I guess that does mean something after all. So what's your take on the ball game tonight? Kyle Hendricks versus Corey Kluber.
I'm sure if the Cubs could have reset the rotation, they would have much preferred John Lester. Hendricks leads the National League in ERA, had a good season, but it's been a little bit rocky here in the postseason here thus far. Corey Kluber, the ace, obviously, of the Cleveland staff, and a leading candidate for Cy Young Award winner once again this year, deservedly so. The Tribe has won 15 of his last 17 starts. He's been on the mound, and he's at a 2.04 ERA in those 17 starts. So he's cooking. He's in form. He also has a 0.93 career earned run average in 3 starts against the Cubs. I know Cleveland's relying heavily on Corey Kluber, but even beyond Corey Kluber, as you well know, Gabe, this Cleveland bullpen is murder. Murder Incorporated, and if they can get 6 innings out of Kluber tonight, you know it's going to be nothing but Andrew Miller, Brian Shaw, and Cody Allen to close this baseball game out. So Cleveland's objective here is to have the lead or keep the game even through 6 and then go to the pen.
We can cap it all we want, Mark, but it's going to come down to, is someone going to put a crooked number up early for a couple of runs? Man, you know, there's just so many unknowns and variables, and that's the beautiful thing about baseball. So many different possibilities on every pitch.
Unquestionably, and Game 7s are the best regardless of what sport it is. It's everything about Game 7. You go back and you look, since 1982 in the Major League Baseball playoffs, the home team has won 9 of the last 10 times. And in fact, in these Game 7s in World Series, the last 5 of them have played to an average total of just 5 runs. Very low scoring games, these Game 7s in Major League Baseball World's history. So, you know, if these two pitchers are what they say they contend to be coming here, this could be a low scoring affair, and hopefully, and from a Cleveland standpoint, low scoring enough to get to that bullpen.
I think it's going to be a low scoring affair as well. And we had a good friend of ours on and yours yesterday, Dave Malinsky. We were talking a little bit about great World Series games, and I said that the Twins and the Braves 1-0 games, the best baseball game I ever saw. We might have something like that tonight. Who knows?
I think we could just as well. The last time Cleveland was in a World Series, remember the Florida Marlins when they lost Game 7 when everybody in Cleveland remembers they had that lead going into the ninth inning, and Jose Mesa, I don't know if I told you the story or not, but Jose Mesa comes out of the bullpen for the Cleveland Indians, and he's warming up, and his first warm-up pitch bounced about 8 feet in front of the plate. We knew right then we were in trouble.
Bad sign, huh?
And he choked the lead, and they went on to lose the World Series. So that'll be in everybody's mind here tonight when they watch this game. Hopefully the bullpen a little bit better than Jose Mesa was then.
I know. It makes me think of the Bills in the Super Bowl. In the fourth one, the Bills were up at the half, Mark. And I thought, man, this might be the one. And then the second half started, and Thurman Thomas couldn't find his helmet. he literally couldn't find his helmet. And I was like, how come Thomas isn't on the field? He's on the sidelines looking for his helmet. And I thought, oh, God, this is it. And then lo and behold, Thurman got in, fumbled. It was returned for a touchdown. And it just, I don't think the Bills scored a damn point in the second half of that game. All right, so you're all with the Tribe tonight, huh? Hometown call.
Yeah, well, it's not so much a hometown call. I mean, even if I separate myself from the fact that it's Cleveland and Chicago, I just do
the
love these
bullpen and Kluber,
The bullpen and Kluber, exactly. And, you know, for the way that they've performed, the way they've played here right now, and the numbers behind them, like I say, 9 out of the last 10 Game 7 home team winners, I think the Tribe ends up popping the cork tonight.
All right, so let's switch gears and talk some NFL football. The Atlanta Falcons. A very emotional win against the Green Bay Packers. They didn't cover the 3, but I don't think Dan Quinn or the players care about that. You know, the Falcons were down this road last year. They were off to an impressive start, and then the losses started to rack up, and they couldn't stop them. This year, they put out the fire. Very impressive win against Green Bay. Matt Ryan showed a ton of heart. They're a dangerous football team, but I don't know, Mark. I mean, this is a flatter spot than a Hillary Clinton speech, man. I mean, you roll in after this win, not to mention, courtesy of the playbook, that underdogs now 21-3 in the last 24 Atlanta Falcon football games.
That's a pretty strong stat there. Dan Quinn, since he's taken over there, has played games where the favorite has not performed well. The underdog has, as you mentioned, 21-3. The question I have here for the Atlanta Falcons is this M.O. about Dan Quinn. I mean, when they got out to this great start last football season and just died, they got out to this great start here this football season and looked like they were going to die again. If they don't beat Green Bay, it would have been 3 losses in a row. And, you know, they would have been known as Quinners. Not quite winners, but they're kind of in between right now. And I think this game here tonight is going to be huge for the Atlanta Falcons, if you know, for which direction they're going to head here. I don't like their chances. I do like, in fact, the Tampa Bay side of this football game, even though the Bucs choked away a big game to the Oakland Raiders last week as well. But, you know, you come back at home off a hard loss like that. You've got this stat about Dan Quinn here involved in this contest here. I got to stay at home with the Bucs in this football game.
Bucs have been a disappointment, though, haven't they, Mark? They just don't have it in them. They don't have that second gear. They come out, they play well, they're okay, but they don't have that next gear that they can kick it into in the fourth quarter. And, you know, I was pretty high on the Bucs. I thought the Bucs could sort of be a sleeper this year, but they're not a sleeper. They're just asleep at the wheel.
They are. You know, I touted them at the Superbook seminar in August. I thought they would be an overwin team this year, Tampa Bay, because they had put up some pretty solid offensive and defensive numbers last year. And you'd figure another year under Jameis Winston's belt was only going to help their cause. But he's been so erratic. He's looking more and more like the quarterback that was at Florida State.
Yep.
That in the end, you never knew what you were going to get. You were either going to get a Heisman Trophy performance, or, you know, he would just stink up the joint, and he's been stinking up the joint here of late.
It's interesting. Him and Mariota came in at the same time, and Mariota's definitely progressing quicker, Mark.
No question about that.
At least, you know, and they're in different situations, obviously, and a different style of offense. But just from a mental standpoint, the development of becoming a winning quarterback in the NFL, you can tell Marcus is way further ahead.
Yeah, he is. You know, I think he controls the game better. I think he's a better playbook X's and O's kind of a quarterback. I think with Jameis Winston, it's more physical, fundamental athleticism on his part. But I think when it counts upstairs, I think reading the playbook, reading the defenses, I think that's where Mariota owns the edge.
I'm not ready to write off Winston's career yet. You look at Cam Newton. It took him a couple of years. He came out on fire, but then it took him a couple of years. People were getting frustrated with Cam before the car accident. And then if something just was different. He came back from the car accident, and he was lighting it up. So here's some breaking news from earlier in the day. And I understand, actually, another breaking news that Ben Roethlisberger set to return this week. But I was very surprised to see Norv Turner resigns as offensive coordinator of the Minnesota Vikings. Normally, I'd have time to do some research and figure out, like, even behind the scenes, what the rumors are of what was going on there. But, you know, this caught me off guard, Mark, and it happened right before we came on. I hosted an MMA show earlier in the day, so I was on the air basically when this went down. But this is shocking news.
It's big time news. I didn't know about it. You're telling me for the first time as well.
Yeah, Norv Turner resigns as offensive coordinator. Now listen, Pat Shurmur takes over, a guy that's been around the block, but nevertheless, Norv Turner, like, Zimmer never went near the offense. Norv Turner was essentially the assistant head coach of that football team, Mark.
Yes, he was. A former head coach and a really well-respected offensive coordinator. They just couldn't get a running game established there, and it all went downhill when AP went down, when Peterson went down. And unfortunately, somebody took the fall for this two-game losing slide here for Minnesota. It had to be Turner. I'm a little bit surprised at that. And Pat Shurmur, I remember him in his days when he was with the Cleveland Browns as an offensive coordinator. They couldn't move the ball. I think in one season, they scored more than 21 points only one time. So I don't know if this is a positive move or not for the Vikings here. It could be a move out of desperation.
I'll tell you, Mark, I know you've already done the playbook and the newsletter, and the numbers all predicate the Vikings. But when you have a situation like this, the players have to be as shocked as anybody. And I don't know. I don't know what happened. He didn't get fired. He resigned. So I don't know what happened behind the scenes. And I find it hard to believe that Zimmer, such a class act and man as a head coach, threw Turner under the bus after two losses, you know, when they've been as hot as they have been. I don't know. There's something happened. I don't know if Norv Turner's got a personal situation. I just don't know, Mark. But suddenly, I don't want to be laying 6 points with the Vikings now.
Now, I'm a little bit surprised, too. We 5-star best bet Minnesota this week in the Playbook newsletter, and I'm a little bit taken aback by this news here. They obviously weren't on the same page, Turner and Zimmer, and it's a move, again, I think out of desperation here. We'll see whether or not maybe with the different approach to this offense, they'll feel this offense will all of a sudden become formidable and be in attack once again. They didn't put up 300 yards in either of their two losses, so there's a big, big do factor here for this Viking offense.
It's amazing in the NFL, man. They say not for long, and I was talking about that yesterday with the Romo and the Prescott situation. But 3 weeks ago, people were talking about Minnesota going to the Super Bowl. And, you know, we were talking about them being 19-2 against the spread in their last 21 football games. And now their offensive coordinator's gone. They can't move the sticks. They've lost two football games in a row, and the wheels are falling off. And I tell you what, even though the Packers lost that game to the Falcons, I'd be encouraged if I was a Packer fan. They looked pretty good in that game. I think Rodgers might have turned a corner.
Yeah, he might have. You know, he still hasn't really kind of lit the world on fire offensively here. He didn't get only about 220 yards passing again last week. I'm a little bit concerned that this offense is just not what we're used to seeing from the Green Bay Packers here. But, you know, it's still a lot of experience there for Rodgers. And we did acknowledge our discount double check in the newsletter this week.
Oh, you did? I got to check that. Yeah, good.
Yes, we did. Nice. We're looking over this football game here this week. The point that we made here is that the Packers have won only one game by more than 7 points this football season. And you've got an hungry Indianapolis Colts football team here. I'm going to take the points with the Colts just on a sidebar note.
All right, Mark, we've got under 5 minutes left, three games. So let's blast through this first Maction game tonight here. Toledo -9.5. Akron really got caught last week in Buffalo, man. The weather was a factor, but they got smoked, and they were 19-point road favorites. And you got Toledo, who lost his 15-point favorites. Two teams coming off of monster double-digit favorite outright losses.
Yeah, surprising, especially on the Toledo end of the things here. Toledo's only loss prior to that had been to BYU. They were beat by two, but they out-yarded the Cougars over 100 yards in that contest. Toledo is still perfect in the stats this year. They're one of only seven teams that can say that. They've been out-yarded or out-yarded every opponent they've played. I think they get past Akron here tonight. I think it was a wake-up call for them at home last week. I think the Rockets are a much better team here this week than we saw last week against Ohio U.
College football rankings were released last night, the first playoff rankings. A lot of eyebrows were raised that the Texas A&M Aggies were ranked ahead of the Washington Huskies. But, you know, listen, I have a problem with it only because the Aggies got waxed by Bama. But if we're being honest, if we look at Washington's strength of schedule, the non-conference schedule is not doing them any favors. Washington's going to have to run the table here. And even then, they're going to be the fourth seed in the playoffs. But what was your take on this? And A&M now laying 13.5 against Mississippi State. We often see in the past, Mark, remember with the BCS rankings and now the college football rankings, teams get into the spot and then boom, the kids can't handle the pressure and they lose.
Yeah, it's just like the undefeated teams, that news gets tighter and tighter for these teams, especially when these rankings come out. All of a sudden, the pressure is squarely on them. I think it'll be on A&M this week here. This is not a bad Mississippi State team. Not good, but not a bad Mississippi State team. I think laying this many points is way, way too much of a number. And, you know, also the other side of this rankings here is of the first four teams we see this year. Last year, we saw those first four teams. Only one of the four teams made the playoffs.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously there's going to be some changes down the road here. One, especially the Ohio State-Michigan winner making it into this game. But we'll see another team or two out of this top four fall out by the end of the year.
That's a great point that you raised. Only one of them made it. In fact, I think a couple of the teams, they weren't even in the top 10, like when the first poll came out. So there's a lot of football left to be played. We got 1 minute left. Alabama and LSU. Listen, I'm getting tired of betting against Alabama. I've been making money betting the overs in their games. But I tell you, I think people have given up on LSU after Coach Miles was gone. But just give Ed Orgeron the damn job, man. The guy's a hell of a coach. He's winning football games. He wins this game, give him the job. And I think the kids know this. They got a shot, man. I think Bama's going to have their hands full. I'm taking the 7.5.
There'll be a revolt in LSU if he doesn't get this job, especially, like you say, if he beats Alabama in this contest here. Since he's been there, they're 3-0 straight up to the spread, and they've won the yards by 361 yards a game, a winning margin 41.7 points per game. A completely different team behind Ogeron is LSU right now, and I love this stat here. Take a look at this one, if you would, Gabe. LSU at home against undefeated teams the last 14 years, they're 19-4 straight up with only one loss by more than 6 points.
Mark Lawrence, playbook.com. You want to get smarter and richer? Read the playbook. Playbook.com, available on your mobile devices as well. Thanks for the time, Mark.
Gabe, enjoy the game. My pleasure. Thank you.
There's Mark Lawrence with us. The Hall of Famer, Jackie Slater, longtime Los Angeles Ram, joins me next. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci, and it's our honor and our pleasure to welcome a man who played 20 years in the National Football League, a seven-time Pro Bowler, and a member of the most important football team of all time, the Pro Football Hall of Fame football team. Inducted into the Hall of Fame about 14 years ago as a man. We're all getting old, evidently, as we're really happy to welcome Jackie Slater to the Fantasy Sports Network. Jackie, welcome to the show. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Glad I can make it. My good friend Josh said, hey, Jackie, I need you to talk to some buddies of mine. So I said, okay, no problem.
Man, remember Josh the high roller, man. Rimmer hangs, he knows you. I think he speaks to Eric Dickerson every day, I think, Rimmer, man. He's a high roller.
Well, I don't know about consider myself a high on the totem pole, but Josh is a friend of mine and a great guy.
Hey, well, you're pretty high on the totem pole, sir. You played 20 years in the National Football League and a Hall of Famer, all with the same organization, 19 Los Angeles, one with St. Louis. And I don't mean this with any disrespect to the people of St. Louis, but it just feels right, man, to see the Rams in Southern California and not in a dome, but with the sun shining down on the beautiful helmet that is the Rams helmet. It gives me goosebumps, Jackie. It makes me think of being a kid and watching you guys and the great rivalries with the 49ers and the sun shining down and your trips to Candlestick. It just feels right being back in L.A., doesn't it?
It certainly does, and it is right. I mean, I think, I think that they should have never have taken the name with them. I mean, allow them to move the franchise, but give them a new name in St. Louis. Well, anyway, all of that's behind us now. It's taken two decades to get them back here. They're back. The ownership is pretty excited about being here. The fans are excited about having them here. The players are busting their humps trying to win. And you can see it every single game with the effort they put in. They're coming up short a little bit, but, man, they're playing hard. And you couldn't ask for anything more. Beautiful weather, football in Southern California. It's utopic.
Yeah, I think the fans have to be pleased. I mean, the Rams have been competitive, streaky but competitive. What do you make of it when you watch the Rams this year, Jackie, in which, you know, one Sunday they look like they can play with anybody in the National Football League, and then on other Sundays, they look like an expansion team. What do you make of the inconsistency?
Well, the inconsistency, it centers around a lot of areas that, don't have a lot of veteran players. We've seen Todd Gurley become the Rookie of the Year a year ago, rushing for over 1,000 yards in about 10-plus games. And this year we've seen him really not be able to get on track. Well, the problems are a couple of things. Number one, their young and fairly inexperienced quarterback is not, making a lot of plays up the field with the vertical passing game consistently. And so what do? They stack the box with extra defenders, and it makes for difficult trekking for a running back and a running game. The other thing is, I remember when Eric Dickerson came to the Rams in 1983, our offensive line averaged 6.4 years of NFL experience. And then we went on and set the single-season rushing record. The following year, the NFL single-season record. We had the rookie rushing record and the single-season rushing record. And we were not fazed by anything. We were dazzled and happy to have a talent, a supreme talent, like Eric Dickerson, like I'm sure they are at the Rams. But, you got to have a whole lot of technical problems solved in the offensive line before you can really give a great back like that a chance to showcase his skills. Eric Dickerson will tell you the best thing that happened to him was the line that he walked into.
Speaking of offensive lines, Carolina's offensive line is getting Cam Newton killed, and he's getting tired of it. There have been a lot of late hits to Cam. Last year, there wasn't one single roughing the passer penalty called. This year, we've seen him repeatedly get hit. He speaks out last week, says, I'm going to speak to the commissioner about this. Seems to have rubbed a lot of defensive players the wrong way, almost like the kid in the schoolyard. They say, I'm going to go tell the principal. Other guys are saying, hey, man, you should slide more. You want to run the football. You're a big dude. You're a target. You were one of the greatest offensive linemen ever. What do you tell Cam? And are defenders taking liberties with him? How would you handle this if this is your quarterback?
Well, I mean, Cam's got to know that he's going to be hit. The guy weighs 240 pounds, and he's a running quarterback. And so the difference between him and Michael Vick was Michael Vick was a heck of a lot more elusive, and people were on their heels all the time because if you throw at him and miss, that could be six. With this guy, he's a big guy, so that's throwing at him to bring him down, not to let him run over them like he's capable of doing. They're throwing their bodies around to get him on the ground because he weighs 250 pounds. I remember, in 1976 playing the San Francisco 49ers, and James Harris was our quarterback, and I was a rookie. And he got sacked 10 times on a nationally televised game with Howard Cosell during the broadcast. And some of those body shots and head blows he took were wicked. He never complained, never got a call, just got up and kept playing.
How personal did you take it, man, that night when you saw your quarterback getting hit? Because it just
I took it very personal when my guy did it. And I took it personal also on when he got hit in general, because I was a part of a group of men that was in charge of keeping him upright and keeping the dirt off him. So I always took it personal. I always wanted him not to get hit. And I think that's the nature of good offensive linemen.
You coach at a small college. Why a small college? Do you love the actual coaching with obviously your pedigree? That you have, you could name your job if you wanted to coach football or even professional football. Why Azuka College?
Well, I don't know if I could name my job, to be perfectly honest with you, because I had a stint coaching pro football with the Oakland Raiders under Al Davis a number of years ago, and and I failed miserably.
Hey, well, listen, it wouldn't have ended well for Vince Lombardi in that era there, Jackie. Don't be too hard on yourself. They went through a lot of pretty good coaches there.
Yeah, well, I knew I didn't do a good job because I never had coached before, and I was there to come alongside of a friend of mine who wanted some loyal lieutenants, and he was going to teach me everything I needed to know, and I just didn't learn it fast enough on the job. I'm coaching currently at Azusa Pacific University, home of Christian Okoye, the Nigerian nightmare. I've been here for 6 years, and it's just been a fabulous experience for me. The head coach, Victor Santa Cruz, Bob Wallace, the president of the university, the fantastic people with building people, building young men and women as their number one priority. So I have the unique opportunity to do what I love doing, and that is teaching and passing along my skill set to young men who really want to learn it. And then at the same time, having the opportunity to impact these kids' lives for all of eternity. And I'm seeing these young guys go off and they're marrying and they're becoming responsible citizens in the community and they're finding their way, and they're finding their way with a lot of hope. That hope is built on their faith in Jesus Christ that is huge right here at this place where I am coaching. And I couldn't right now be at a better place. I really enjoy it, especially the opportunity to pour into the lives of young men.
And Jackie, we've got like 1 minute left. So on the way out here, I wanted to ask you, and ask you this for myself, as well as people watching right now. What is the key to success? Is it hard work? Is it dedication? Is it loyalty? What do you tell people? What is the key to success in whatever field you may be in?
Well, you know, I was asked that question when I was prompted to, when I got inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2001. I had to write this speech and everything, and all of the people who advised me, you know, as I was putting my thoughts together, they asked that question. They wanted to know what was the reason for the success and where did it come from. And this is my answer to that question, and it hasn't changed. It was the same before I was asked the question, before I went into the Hall of Fame, and it's going to be consistent. I was as successful as I was because the good Lord blessed me with a unique set of abilities, physical abilities to be able to, I had great quickness, speed, and power. But that's not just enough. You have to have a desire to work at it. And I had a desire to work at it. I played with a lot of guys who played a decade who didn't have a desire. They would tell you all the time, I can only give you one day a week. And that was on Sundays. Well, what about the work ethic you bring to develop the product you want to put out on Sundays? And then, so I had the opportunity to have a unique amount of abilities given to me. And even those that I acquired, my mindset in the acquisition of those acquired abilities, I think was a blessing from God and ordained for my life. So to answer your question, and I can remember people blinking their eyes in disbelief when I shared this in 2001 on a national platform. I said, the reason why I've been successful is because God has ordained this for my life. That hasn't changed. And I've been so blessed and so thankful to know that I acquired things, to know that things were given to me, to know that the table was set all along the way. And to answer your question, that's it in a nutshell.
You know, Jackie, as I get older and closer to God, I feel more at ease, and I think I've been happier as well. I'm a big fan of Joel Osteen and the positive message that he's preaching and that you're preaching as well. Jackie, it was an honor to have you on the show. I hope you have time to do it again in the future, talk some football. Thanks for joining us, sir.
Glad I can do it. Have a great day.
There's Jackie Slater with us, the Hall of Famer. All right, we go from the Hall of Famer to the Raging Redhead, Cam Stewart, Hall of Famer in my heart. Game Time Decision continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. We follow up with Jackie Slater with the Raging Redhead, Cam Stewart. I know, Cam, You remember Jackie Slater,
I do.
One of the best offensive linemen ever to play the game.
Good interview, Gabe. No, Jackie Slater, two decades doing it, too. That guy was an absolute monster when he played.
You know what, though, Cam? You know, I like getting these the former greats on.
Yeah.
And, you know, I treat them with a lot of respect and stuff. But you get these Hall of Famers on. There's no joking.
No.
Like, they're all business. That's why they're in the Hall of Fame.
Let
like,
me tell you.
They're all business,
Let me
man.
Tell you something, Gabe. Yeah, no, that was good, though.
You crack a joke with them? It's like, no.
He enjoyed it. No, he was rolling with it. He was just a serious guy. He was all. And when he played, though, Jackie Slater is one of the best of all time.
And
one of the best.
I remember that, too. I like what he said. He goes, I went there because a good friend asked me to, Art Shell.
Yes.
But that was a mess, man. He was a little hard on himself with the Raiders.
I mean, with Al Davis and that a decade of the Raiders, that was nobody could have worked there. You said it.
Vince Lombardi I lived couldn't. In Los Angeles at the time, actually, when Bo Jackson was on the Raiders and Mike Shanahan got hired as the head coach of the Raiders. I don't think people remember that Mike Shanahan was actually the head coach of the Los Angeles Raiders. But the Raider players used to sit on their helmets during practice. Like Howie Long, Bo Jackson, and everyone. And I guess Shanahan, like, kicked the helmet from underneath one of the players, and the player fell on his ass. And he was like, you don't disrespect the logo by sitting on this. And Al Davis found out.
Oh, he went ballistic.
And was like, you don't disrespect my players. I don't care if they sit on the helmet. And Shanahan got fired, went to Denver, and then just knocked the snot out of the Raiders for the rest of eternity and went to a Super Bowl.
He tried to protect them, but hey, what are you going to do?
It's funny, yeah. But it was almost like a thing. Shanahan's a straight, by-the-book, hard-ass guy. Not what Bo Jackson and Howie Long and Jay Schrader needed, right?
Well, those Raiders
remember
back
Jay
then.
Jay Schrader was the quarterback.
Exactly. And the thing about those old Raiders team, Renzi was said, even though they knocked down Seattle in 83, Al Davis used to just draft guys on speed. It didn't matter if they didn't have hands. What does he run? Let me hire him as a receiver. He just thought speed kills all the time.
Willie Gault.
Yeah, Willie Gault.
All right. So let's jump in here, Cam. Game seven of the World Series. The Cubs are -115. The total was 6.5, but I see some sevens now out there.
Interesting. I know where you're going.
I like the under, man. It's 4-2 to the under in this World Series through six games, Cam. We got Kluver versus Hendricks. Who you got?
I'm actually going with Chief Wahoo and the Cleveland Indians. I like the spot for Cleveland. Kluber's been money in the playoffs. Morency, I'm going to tell you another thing, too. Interesting factoid. This one's not like, you know, because of any trends or anything. But listen, the last time there were two ties in the NFL, remember, way back in 1997, the Marlins beat the Indians in Game 7. I don't like that stuff, but I think it's going to be role reversal. I think the Indians beat the Cubs, even though everyone's excited right now. Kluber, hey, he's the automatic MVP. Cleveland wins tonight. It's undebatable. He's the man. And I'll tell you something. He's going to throw a lot of junk, only throwing 31% fastballs. What is the Cubs' weakness? Just like the Blue Jays, these guys can't handle off-speed pitches. They're more of a fastball team. Give me Kluber and Cleveland.
I like that stat, Cam.
Thanks, Gabe.
So the last time there was two NFL ties was the year that
the Indians lost in seven to the Marlins. And remember what happened the next year with Trader Jack?
How do they find this stuff?
I don't know.
Like, how do they find this stuff? Like,
I got to be honest with you. Earlier, Chris Meany.
Chris Bryant.
Meany told me.
Chris Bryant. Yeah, but Meany didn't research this himself, right?
He's a pretty smart guy.
He is a smart guy. He's smarter than Dumb and Dumber over
well,
here.
Well, camera
on the
too. I know. This guy's
crazy. Yeah, these guys, like... Like, not only I don't think Drew's ever heard of Jackie Slater.
No.
I don't think Drew even knew the Rams used to play in L.A.
Listen to this one, Morency. Cam? I go, yeah, it's like Sanka. It's a loser. He goes, what the heck's Sanka? He didn't know that Sanka was instant coffee. So I'm just like, I don't even know what to tell this guy anymore. He didn't even know the motto for good to the last drop, Maxwell House, anything.
If you two went on Jeopardy, you would end up owing
schooled.
Trebek like $1 million. You'd be like the first guys ever, like into minus, like, you know, $12 million.
Camera 2, Drew, -17,000.
I would pay money, man, to see you guys on Jeopardy. And just the disdain that Trebek would have and thinking, like,
do you guys
know anything about anything?
He's got like, disdain for smart anything? Guys. He's got disdain for Mensa members.
Now, the only thing these guys would win, they would do well. Like
in sports?
Questions fantasy football.
Yeah, or apps on the phone. Yeah. Stuff like that.
Yeah. What is Tinder?
What is Tinder?
They like that.
That was a good joke, Brad. That was good.
What is Tinder? Like I said, you know, the only smart guy in the room over here is my man Johnny.
Oh, Johnny's smart.
Johnny knows what time it is, and these guys pick on Johnny like Johnny's clueless.
I told Johnny knew what Sanka was too. So anyway,
Johnny knows what Sanka is. All right. So I'm taking the Cubs tonight. You're taking the Indians.
I wish we were on the same side, Morency, but the winners will be one of ours.
All right. What do you make of the Raiders and the Broncos game, man?
I know what this is.
Are the Raiders for real? We're going to
find out. Yeah, that great line by you, Morency. We're going to find out. And I'll tell you something. I have Derek Carr in fantasy, and he's helping me crush it. My Pooch Patrol team's on fire because of Carr. But this is the thing. If you could actually Oakland beat Denver in this game, then I'll think you're for real. But I'm going to tell you, Denver, I'm a little bit worried, Gabe. They played San Diego. They might have beaten them. And you look at the score, they beat them by 8. Phillip Rivers, that was not his fault. But Denver is very opportunistic. That's the problem. But I have a slight lean to the Raiders. I'm going to wait on that game, though. But we'll see if the Oakland's for real.
All right, Cam. We'll talk more football on Morency Unfiltered.
We will.
Time is flying by. But we got 3 games on National Hockey League ice tonight.
Mm-hmm.
The Canucks were 4-0. Now they're 4-4. Habs are 8-0-1. Canadians laying -220 tonight in Montreal.
Morency, I don't blindly take dogs. I actually think this is a good spot for Vancouver. I'm going to give you another stat. Ryan Miller, 11-7-1 in Montreal. The Habs are hot, though. But I'm going to tell you, you're getting Vancouver at like +200, probably +210 by game time. I will tell you, you can get Vancouver at +1.5, -40. I don't like to lay the juice, but I have a feeling it is going to be a tight game. They are going to be desperate. I like Vancouver in regulation and +1.5. Maybe Montreal to win in overtime, but it's a tight, tight game.
I'm giving you a lot of props. I don't want to rain on your parade.
I'm pretty good.
I'm impressed with the trend of 11-7. If you were going to say he's 11-2, I would have been like, ooh. 11-4. He's 11-7.
In Montreal.
Okay, that's impressive. We got less than a red. Red Wings and Flyers.
Flyers
games average score 7.3 goals a game.
The Flyers are on fire. Our boy got to be here
about
the
this,
whole game.
Cam, you want stats? Hey, we're busting out the stats and the trends tonight.
Yep.
The Wings haven't won a regular season game in Philadelphia since Ron Hextall was there. Mike Vernon was the goalie. It's been 20 years since I won a regular season game in Philadelphia.
Unbelievable. Flyers.
Pittsburgh Penguins. Now I'm channeling Steve Kulish. Cam, the Pittsburgh Penguins are taking on the Ducks tonight since Sidney Crosby's come back. He's been killing it.
Listen, Morency, both teams are on fire, but I got a slight lean to the Penguins because Sidney's hot.
Sidney Crosby's the best hockey player in the world, not that communist from Russia.
My wife is beautiful, and I love hockey.
The best, and USA is second. Russia sucks.
Yeah, both teams hot. Penn 6-2, Ducks 4-4, but won 4 of their last 6.
That's hockey tonight. Penguins.
Yeah.
Penguins 6-2. Tough game tonight.
Yeah.
You know, Cam, this is something you're going to like because I know you like a big salami sandwich.
I do.
Grand salami to the over.
Well, I like that because the Flyers might get there.
Hey, the Habs are scoring goals. The Flyers, the Red Wings and Flyers can put the puck in the net. Pens and Ducks ain't going to be a 1-0 game. We're taking a grand salami to the over. Find out what else we're taking when we come up with our picks coming up next. All right, it's time for our plays of the day. It's Game 7 of the World Series. As an extremely drunk Harry Carey will be saying from heaven tonight, I can't believe the Cubs won! The Cubs won! Cubs win! Cubs win! The Cubs are going to win the World Series. And you have like 50,000 people leaving the stadium very, very disappointed tonight. And they'd be even more disappointed because they're going home and they're still in Cleveland. All right, so under 7. Just kidding, Cleveland. Love you. You're going to lose tonight, though. Chicago, and this game goes under 7. Toledo and Akron. The Zips always screw me, but I'm zipping it up and I'm taking the 9.5. Let's go over the number 72. Raptors and Wizards. Raptors are a good road team. Let's lay the point. Thunderstruck. Let's take the Oklahoma City Thunder +7 against the Clippers. I like this game to go over 209.5 points. And a little NHL hockey for you guys. I think it's going to be some pucks put on the other side of the line. Let's go with the Grand Salami over the number, over 16.5. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.